Hello, this is Unusual Sources on CFMU Radio at McMaster University, 93.3 FM, online at cfmu.ca. Well, I'm Doug Brown, host for today. We're going to have a look at privatization. It's a process that's occurring globally, but particularly in Ontario and in Canada. And you know, we're seeing more and more of our services and public infrastructure being privatized. Sometimes it's total privatization. Other times it's contracting out of services, contracting out of financing, public-private partnerships. So today we have assembled a panel to discuss this issue. People knowledgeable about public services, people who provide public services. And I'll begin with Eric Tuck. Eric is the president of ATU Local 107. They're the union local representing our transit workers here in Hamilton. We have also Erin Thorson. She's with OPSU 241, executive member of OPSU. And I'll also add, also from OPSU today is Olivia Lopez, who is a local representative. And, of course, familiar to all our listeners, Don McLean from 350 Committee in Hamilton. So welcome all. And I think what we'll do maybe initially is there is a campaign about privatization, opposed to privatizing our public services, and it's being run by OPSU. So, Erin, could you tell us a bit about that campaign?
For sure. Thanks, Doug. So OPSU is working on a grassroots campaign. We've been active for almost a year now, and the priority of the campaign itself is to ensure that no political party that supports privatization is ever elected. We are bringing the campaign to communities all across the province with the goal of educating the public and creating awareness of privatization and its devastating effects on our families. We are looking at different services that we offer, sort of an umbrella campaign. It's the LCBO, our Service Ontario's, our colleges, jails, and of course the ever-elusive hydroelectricity.
Okay, and there's certainly a lot going on, a lot of negative developments in various public sectors across Ontario, across Canada. Here at Unusual Sources, of course, we have a special interest in transit and transportation. And Eric, can you tell us how privatization is affecting public transit?
Yes, it's my pleasure, Doug. You know, as you know, we've started our own campaign here in Hamilton to keep transit public, but it is a province-wide campaign, and actually it is likely to become a national campaign because this is not a one-off problem. We have several different unions that are trying to fight this, and we're doing it because we know that privatization doesn't work. Here in Hamilton, our particular fight to keep transit public is in regards to the new LRT that's being built. And as you know, the provincial government through Metrolinx has decided to do a P3 procurement policy, not only here in Hamilton, but on any of the new LRT lines across Ontario. And the P3, as you know, transit, first of all, is not a for-profit business. It's a service industry where we have never made a profit historically. And for the province to turn that over to the public sector or the private sector to profit from that is going to, of course, increase costs and cause a lot of complications for transit, not just for the LRT lines, but for the rest of the transit system here in the city and across Ontario.
Thanks, Eric. And also, and you know, there's other areas, you know, municipally that there's always pressure to privatize services. And in particular, I was thinking about water and sewer. In fact, some multinational corporations made a big campaign a number of years ago to take over the operation of municipal water and sewer systems. They didn't get much penetration. Fortunately, most municipalities saw this as a bad move, but not in Hamilton. So, Don, what happened in Hamilton?
Well, in Hamilton, in the mid-90s, we turned over our water and sewer system to a private company. And the story was that this was going to put Hamilton on the map. It was going to generate special benefits for the people of Hamilton, and it was going to save money and so on. That lasted for a few years, and it essentially fell apart. The company eventually went bankrupt, but in the course of it, the municipality recognized that this was a mistake and took back the control of the water and sewer system. But this was happening also internationally. We had a situation in Bolivia, for example, a very famous one where a private company took over the water system. And if you didn't have any money, if you didn't have any resources, you didn't get any water. And they actually made it a law that you could not collect rainwater. And that resulted, as you can imagine, in a lot of opposition and the company eventually being chased out of Bolivia. So when you turn over your public systems to a private company, first of all, it's going to cost more because the private company is there to make money. So it's going to cost an additional amount to what it would normally cost for the service. But in addition, you lose a bunch of features as well. So you lose the transparency that's available from the public sector. If I want to know something the government is doing, I can get that information. It's required to be public. In a private company, it's private.
Yeah, so it's, we should be learning from our mistakes. And certainly Hamilton made a mistake. It's, illustrative of the whole problem of privatizing public services. You know, the public sector gets criticized usually by people that want to take over vital public functions and make money. But when you look at the record, the public service has been very successful in providing good services in all sorts of facets. I think it's important to remember, you know, public servants work for the public good. They're not working for a corporate profit. So speaking of corporate profits, we've been talking about privatization in more of an abstract sense so far, but there are real companies out there that are really trying to drive this. And maybe I can shift to the financial area, which affects everything. The federal government just set up a Canadian Infrastructure Bank, and it's funny that the CEO of this bank is Bruce McQuaig. Eric has a smile on his face because Bruce McQuaig, until a year ago, was the CEO of Metrolinx, and Metrolinx, unfortunately, is part of the public-private partnership exercise. As a condition of funding their LRTs, they required not just the privatization of operation, but the privatization of the financing itself. And that was something I just couldn't understand. So what do you think the rationale for that is, Eric?
Absolutely, Doug. You know, the reality is that, and this happens so often, that politicians get into a position of power, and they put these contracts out for tender. And the reality is it costs the taxpayers more. In fact, we know the Auditor General's report from 2015, there's over $8 billion of taxpayers' money that was wasted on these P3 programs, taking the public sector or the public jobs and the public services and handing them over for for-profit corporations. And then they go and they hire the politicians or the retired you know, heads of these different corporations to run their bids and to place the bid on the next one. The reality is it does add costs to the services. Time and time again, we've seen this at, when you really break it down, the cost ends up being a lot more. And it's not just the financial costs, it's also the cost of the services. In transit alone, we look at any of the privatized transit companies across North America where they have gone private. Usually that results in a cut of service because certainly if a road is not profitable, they're not going to continue running that route. Where if it's a publicly run service, they recognize the human aspect of that. They're there to provide a service and not to make profits, and that's the difference. Privatization creates also precarious workforce that, you know, quite often they don't pay any pensions, they don't pay any benefits, and there's very little community benefits in terms of providing services that aren't profitable.
Yeah, that's very clear. And let's move on to the provincial public service. Aaron, how is privatization affecting public services within the provincial government?
I think the easier answer would be how isn't it affecting our services? What people don't realize is that any of the revenue that we make as far as, you know, take LCBO, for example, was it 2015, they made close to $2.4 billion over and above, you know, and that money goes back into our healthcare, that goes back into our education. And if you're not actually making that money, like if we're out $2.4 billion, because all of a sudden we're seeing our sales of alcohol in a grocery store, they're not giving that money back to us. They're not going to put it into education. And I think somebody would end up with a brand new yacht or a vacation home somewhere else, right? They're not caring about putting that back into our own communities where we do see that money be spent wisely.
Right. And thinking of LCBO, one thing I value is, unlike, say, tobacco, where very young children get access to tobacco because there's not a controlled distribution or not a very loosely privately controlled distribution, in LCBO, there is a very good control. Underage people are not allowed to make purchases at LCBO. So there, this is the value of public institutions is the guarantee of that kind of security. Another aspect though within the province, we did have I think some examples way back in the Mike Harris era. Services, well, I guess in some cases it was good if they were privatized because in some cases they were just terminated. But it had a very, very bad effect. Maybe you could talk about some of those experiences, Aaron.
So Harris was prior to my time, but we are still seeing the effects of some of his policies and some of what he tried to implement. Back in the early mid-90s, I'd say, Harris started to look at privatizing hydro or electricity, changed some of the legislation on how that would look. And we are clearly seeing that those effects today in not just skyrocketing hydro prices, but also with some of the contracts that the current wind government has given out. So what we're seeing is an increase of hydro prices, or my hydro bill has gone up to pay for green energy contracts. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely support green energy, and I think that's the way that we need to go. But those contracts went to private companies, not public companies, and they charge top dollar. I think it's 80 cents a kilowatt hour as opposed to 13 cents what we pay right now. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's plenty of examples, Doug, as you know. When you say Mike Harris, the first thing that comes to my mind is the 407, the most expensive highway in North America that nobody can afford to drive on except for the very wealthy. The reality is that highway was built with our taxpayers' money through provincial dollars, and then it was sold off by that government by the Harris government to a private consortium to own and operate for the next 100 years. That's our investment. You know, all these public institutions were left to us, were built. Hydro is a perfect example. Transit, public education, public health care. These are all things that have been left to us by previous generations, built up and given to us to care for, not to sell off on the auction block to the highest bidder.
Yeah, and thinking of future generations, unfortunate aspects of the public-private partnerships and privatization is it really encourages the current accounting and government encourages privatization. So Wind sells off a major public asset, half of Hydro One, and then they say, "Oh, the deficit is down." Well, it's like me getting into debt and saying, "Well, yeah, but I sold my house." It makes no sense selling assets or not funding your own assets. And the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives have done some very good research on the topic, and this is one of the issues they raised is again about the bad accounting practices that it's leading to. It looks good now. Wind says we've reduced the deficit, but down the road, we are going to have to pay all these debts.
You're bang on there, Doug. You know, when Wind sold the first 30% of the Hydro, she did. She bragged about bringing down the deficit. And now, proceeding with the next sell-off of another 30%, she's bragging about it. The reality is, and these P3s are no different. The public-private partnership is simply a Ponzi scam, where the perception is we're doing all this infrastructure building and we're not creating a bigger deficit. The reality is, this money is being borrowed by these private corporations. It's being borrowed at, say 3%, and then they're billing back over the term of the agreement. And they're billing back an additional 4% interest on that. So it ends up costing us actually a lot more money for building the same thing or for operating and maintaining the LRT, for example. The reality is the costs are being increased through this privatization, but it hides it from the government's books. It's no longer on their debt book. It's on the private corporations.
Right. And, my understanding is that if the government, gives Hamilton the $1 billion for the LRT, that goes on the provincial books right away, and it makes a big increase in the deficit. But there's no debt to be repaid afterwards. That gets ignored. So with the public-private partnership, the financing goes into this thing. Well, we really, this is spread out over, 30 years for the next generation to pay off. We really are putting a burden on.
It's a scary thought when we think of what our forefathers left us, these great institutions, mm-hmm. and then now what we're leaving our kids is the debt of the next generation of transit, the next generation of healthcare. By doing it through the three P's, we're not leaving them institutions that are sound and financially respected. We're leaving them more debt. Debt that we could actually reduce by doing it in-house and developing these services ourselves.
Yeah, and with this, thinking of the savings, if we did it ourselves, provided the whole thing, public funding and public services, and the enormous savings that could be reinvested. We do need a lot of new investment in infrastructure. Transit in particular, we're not getting it because we're just not spending the money effectively.
As I said, that $8 billion that the Auditor General touted was lost in 2015 across this province as a result of P3s, that's eight more LRT lines we could have built. That's the reality of it. So, yes, it's a terrible waste of money.
Right.
It strikes me that when they talk about 3P, public-private partnerships, the partnership part is really fraudulent. And you've probably got some examples of it, but this is a packaging process of no, we're not privatizing. We're entering into a partnership. Exactly the same things happen, but we call it something different.
In fact, I think it's worse than privatizing in many cases because it's a big public subsidy to the private partner. The partnership is the public pays and we take the profit.
And the public takes the risk.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the ways they try and sell this is that, it reduces the risk. It takes the risk off the public. And the reality is it dumps a heck of a lot more risk onto us. And that's been proven. You look at across the UK and all across Europe when they did the privatization back through the 70s. It lasted for a short period of time. And then many of these corporations, just like in the water here in Hamilton, they walk away and they go bankrupt because it's no longer profitable. They take as much out of that as they can, and then they end up walking away, and you're left picking up the pieces. And in the case of in England, when they tried to privatize the tube, and the government took it back because they had some serious accidents, as you know, and a lot of people were injured because they usually cut costs on things like safety and maintenance. They defer it rather than doing it every 5 years. They do it 7 years because it's all about profit, and they have to answer to the shareholders. And we have things happen that ends up hurting people.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we're going to take a little break now for public service announcement. But you're listening to CFMU 93.3 FM, Unusual Sources. And today we have a good panel on privatization. So we'll be back with Eric Tuck and Aaron Thorson, Don McLean, Olivier Lopez, and myself, Doug Brown, in just a few moments. And we're back with our panel on privatization. This is CFMU Radio Unusual Sources. During the break, actually, Don and I and Aaron were talking about the privatization of water services within Hamilton. And Don, can you fill us in? What all went on with that exercise?
Well, I really want to defer to Aaron because she articulated it so well. But the change back to public didn't happen accidentally. It happened as a result of people getting engaged, involved, showing up in big numbers at City Council and forcing the hand of council to correct the mistake that they'd made and bring the water and sewer services back into the public hands. And Aaron, you probably have some more that you can add to that.
Yeah, and I certainly don't want to steal your thunder, but I moved to Hamilton to go to school and I never actually left, so I'm super proud to actually say that I'm a Hamiltonian now. And looking into some of the things or some of the failed P3s, not just in Hamilton, but across the province, one of the ones that really stuck out to me was the Hamilton water story. And we did a lot of focus groups in planning the campaign and what it would look like. And the one that really resonated with people was Hamilton water. And it was a success story that we were able to say we generated enough noise as citizens to take our service back. We had seen it been, you know, decimated, major catastrophic environmental spills, millions of liters of sewer just pumping into our harbor. You know, we're probably still cleaning up from that today, or we're still seeing effects of that from today. But it was originally sold as, you know, this wonderful, biggest P3 in its day across North America. We would be the gold standard in water treatment, and some company, actually the guy was a liberal, early in the 90s, and then, sorry, the 70s, actually, and then
Eric Cunningham, I believe.
And he came in with a great idea. You know, we're going to sell it off, a 10-year contract. It was $180 million at the time, and they made some fantastic promises. We're going to create jobs. We're going to make this most effective water treatment system ever, and we're going to open up a world-class training center so that everybody from across the globe could come study in Hamilton and see how we were doing it. Within a year of the company taking over, they laid off half of their workers. Less than a year later, in early 96, it was one of the biggest sewer spills that we had ever seen, and it was $2.5 million in property claims that took years to solve. It changed hands 5 times in 8 years. So you can just see, you know, mismanagement to mismanagement to mismanagement. They're involved in court cases that are still being sorted out today, or it's absolutely insane. So I'm very proud of Hamilton. I'm very proud of its citizens to say, you know, we put up with it for 10 years. We're done. We are going to take it back. And that's something as a private citizen, as a voter, as somebody who thinks I only have one voice, I can make a change and I can make a difference.
I think I maybe interjected with the wrong name as Stuart Smith, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, the
that's
former right. head of the Provincial Liberal.
Yep.
Eric Cunningham was another Liberal. He was involved with Lyonnais Suezdo, I think. There was a big French multinational who tried to privatize across the country. And fortunately, didn't get any uptake outside of Hamilton and maybe one other place. Was there any other uptake from other municipalities, Don?
There may have been a bit of interest, but I don't remember there actually being another privatization that company was able to pull off. And the point that Aaron raises about how the company that the deal was made with suddenly became some other company and then another company and then another company. That's one of the features of privatization.
Absolutely. I can echo those sentiments. Certainly in transit, we know that. We've had so much experience across the U.S. and across Europe that these private corporations just move from one sector or from one section to the next. Wherever the profit and the money trail leads, that's where they go. They'll set up shop. They'll run it into the ground. They'll compromise on safety. We got a perfect example of that in the UK. In 2000, we know that in Hatfield, we had a serious rail derailment there, which resulted in 4 lives lost and over 50 people seriously injured. Across England, we had several derailments. And when they really narrowed down on the cause of it, it was usually deferred maintenance because that's where they can cut the biggest costs, and nobody notices until something happens. And just like with the water treatment here, until something happened, nobody really paid much attention to it. But the reality is that there's serious costs associated with those derailment accidents. There's lawsuit claims, there's the loss of life, and always, you know, there's serious consequences.
There's a lot of railway accidents, aren't there? And sinking Lac-Mic Antique, of course, was the very large disaster. Instead of being CN or CP run, it was, a short line company trying to always reduce costs. Imagine a big train full of dangerous cargo with one person on board. And of course, we got rid of cabooses a long time ago. And so, you know, when he had to get some sleep, he had to leave the train unattended to walk to a hotel with the horrible result. Anyhow, maybe you could talk, segue into some of the other privatizations. We've had some huge privatizations in the last 20 years. CN, I think, was the largest. And that came full circle because, you know, CN, it was a conservative government, the Robert Borden government, way back after the First World War, took the 3 large failed private railways of that time, Canadian Northern Railway, Grand Trunk, and the Intercolonial, saved them, put them into a federal crown corporation called Canadian National, and it was a very successful rail company. It didn't appear on the books that way because, unfortunately, the government had them pay off the enormous debts incurred by the 3 failed private railways. But, that's now in private hands, and you can see it. I was thinking of Churchill, Manitoba. They sold off parts of CN. There's now a short line railway providing service or not providing service. They had some washouts, and They just will not make the investment. That's the problem. It's not in the interest of their bottom line, whereas CN, being a Crown corporation, had due regard for public interest and serving communities. So we're missing that, and it's a shame to see things go full circle, you know, from private to public basically rescuing the private operation and then being turned back over to private entities with the ensuing problems. So, Olivia, I think you had some comments, too, on the money aspect.
Yeah, I was just thinking you guys were talking about the privatization or the sell-off of R407. That is $1 billion in revenue that we are losing as a result of that privatization. And that's important to really realize that when you lose that money, that's not going back into our public services anymore. That's going to be taken into the pockets of stakeholders and shareholders and not back into the quality services that these services were intended for originally. Another example I really wanted to bring up, that's, you know, the Walkerton incident. They privatized the water testing, and that resulted in 2,500 sick and 7 dead. This is a perfect example of why public services are better. There is public accountability as well, and I think it's extremely important to realize that when we privatize our public services, that there are some long-term consequences, not only for the residents at the time, but for our future generations, for our youth.
Yeah, and well, okay, let's move on. You know, we've documented quite a few failures of privatization, bad results. It's hard to think of any success story. Yet these privatizations are continuing. So what can we do as citizens? I speak both to Olivier and Eric and Aaron. So what steps can the public take?
I think it's really to be informed and get involved and realize that you do have a voice as a constituent and that you have an ability to approach your city councilors and let them know that you are against the privatization. That is why this We Own It campaign was launched, to protect our public services from being privatized. And if we use our voice and we band together as a community, we can protect these public services from being privatized, because the privatization, it's a municipal, provincial, national, but it's also an international issue that's happening all over the world. So we really need to be informed. If you visit the weownit.ca, you can sign up there. You can also contact any of your OPSU regions, and they can share information, and we'd be more than happy to give presentations and support you guys in using your voice to really fight the privatization.
I couldn't agree more with what Olivia is saying. The reality is that the people do have the power when they pull together. We've shown that here in Hamilton, certainly, as Aaron pointed out with the water, when the citizens marched in and said, no, we've had enough of this, we want to take it back. We've seen it with the LRT, with our Keep Transit Public campaign, which we only started about 3 or 4 months ago. We've got over 6,000 signatures on our petition. We held a rally. We marched into City Hall. We demanded it of our politicians, our local politicians, to keep transit public, and they voted, and they voted in favor of doing that. Now we got to take that fight to the province, and it can't be one city or just a few people, one union. We all have to come together. We found time and time again throughout history, when people come together, they make a difference. And at the end of the day, there's only one taxpayer. We're paying the bill for this, and we need to make sure that we're getting the most for our money. And the best way to do that is to make sure that we protect our public services and keep them public.
And if it's private, there's nobody that you can go to. There's no politician that you can say, I'm not going to vote for you, or I did vote for you, and now I'm upset. You just don't get that voice. So as soon as it's private, the voice is lost. The opportunity to change is lost.
You're absolutely right, Don. Privatization automatically gives up any local control that you have, any political power that you have to make a difference. You know, imagine if the train doesn't show up. I'm talking about the LRT. If that train doesn't show up to take you to work that morning, you're going to be calling HSR. HSR is going to say, well, it's not us that run it. It's Metrolinx that's in charge of that. You're going to phone Metrolinx and wait for about 3 days for a call back, and they're going to say, well, I'm sorry, we contracted that out to Keolis or some other private company to run. And good luck trying to get an answer from them about why the train didn't show up. The reality is we need to protect these services and make sure they're there when you need them.
Okay. So I think that pretty well wraps it up. I want to thank all our panelists. Olivier Lopez and Aaron Thorson from OPSU. Eric Tuck from the local 117 ATU, representing our Hamilton transit workers, and Don McLean from Hamilton 350. Thank you all. Excellent comments. And that's it for this segment, and we'll be back again shortly.